So what is step two of the seven master steps? Okay, you understand the person's world. You understand what's driving them. You understand what's going on. Let's use Bob as the example. Go, my goodness, this man, he really is a good soul. He feels like he has failed as a man. He doesn't have work. He doesn't support his family. He's not producing the result. His family is suffering. He has no reason to live. He's got to go. That's his belief system. Because he has no meaning. He's insignificant. He's disconnected. In fact, to give you some background, I found out later on, his wife didn't know about this plan, obviously. She, in fact, when he was coming to the seminar, thought, oh boy, all she knew is he hadn't worked for 3 years. He wouldn't talk to the children. He barely talked to her. When friends would come over, he wouldn't come out of the room. And she figured, well, you know, maybe if he goes and drinks Kool-Aid with some guru guy at a seminar, maybe that'll do it. I'll try anything to get him going. So she encouraged him to go for that reason. She had no clue what was going on. So what do you do with a guy like Bob once you understand his world? Well, you got to help him to change. What is the ultimate tool that makes change possible? Leverage. Step two is you got to get leverage. Now, what does that mean? Leverage, well, think about what a lever does, or a lever, as they say in Great Britain. What a lever does, what leverage does, is it allows you, with a small amount of effort, to move something that seems impossible to move. I can move this boulder if I put the lever in the right place in the right way. With just a little bit of effort, I can move this giant, immovable item. Well, leverage in a human being comes when a human being moves from this should change to this must change. You know, everybody's got a list of shoulds. I should lose some weight. I should follow through. I should spend more time with my kids. You know, everybody's got the should list. I should make more calls at work. But most people don't actually change. They just, what I call, should all over themselves. And you don't want to should all over yourself. That doesn't make anything better. But when something's a must, there's something about human beings, when it's a must for them, not everyone else says it's a must, but there's a point in you. Have you ever had this happen? A point where you keep talking about changing something, you keep saying you got to do it, and you start and stop, and you don't follow through, and then one day you finally go, that's it. No more. This is changing now. You know, I am not going to spend one more day this way. And you suddenly go out and you start your run or your walk, or you join the gym and you really follow through, or you go on the diet, or, you know, you want to go, this is enough. I'm not going to live this way. I'm not going to put up with this. And you leave that job or that environment, or you confront that person, or you confront yourself. Or maybe, have you ever had this happen? Ever been in a relationship way too long? You know what I'm talking about? Where you know it's not right, but you keep saying it should change, but you don't have the guts to do it. Or you keep telling yourself, well, it'll get better in the future. Leverage happens when you get to the point where your brain and body become one and you go, this is it, no more. It's when you hit an emotional threshold. It's where change is no longer an option. It's where all of a sudden failing to change in your mind is much more painful than the fear of changing and it not working, or feeling like a failure, or the uncertainty of change. See, most people don't change because, even though they're unhappy, what they're doing meets some of their needs. Let's say somebody smokes cigarettes, and they know, oh my God, it's a terrible habit, and I could get cancer, and I'm coughing a lot, and everything else, but it meets some of your needs. When you smoke cigarettes, you feel certainty and comfort from taking that deep breath in, like we talked about. You get a chance to change your state if you're all stressed out, and all of a sudden you go out and you smoke a cigarette, it totally changes your state, creates variety. You know, it's kind of taking time for yourself. You go out and smoke and you're connecting with yourself. What do we learn in the last session? Well, anytime something you do meets at least three of your needs, it becomes an addiction. So all of a sudden you do this again and again. Why would someone want to stop? Well, maybe it's, on the one hand, it makes you feel comfortable, but on the other, you have some uncertainty because now you're coughing a lot. You don't feel good. Or maybe you're in a relationship with somebody and they hate cigarettes. They hate the smell of smoke. It disgusts them, and you love them and you don't want to lose their love. Now there's some leverage. Now there's a cost. Now you can lose some of your needs if you don't make a change. But, you know, a lot of people kind of coast along and say, I'm going to change. They don't until they hit this point of leverage, this emotional threshold. Where does this happen in your life? Again, go back to relationship. You ever been in a relationship and kept saying you're going to change, and finally one day you said, that's it. Not another day, not another hour. It's been painful in the past. It's painful right now. It's going to be painful in the future. This is over. And you finally took action. Has that ever happened to you? Where's an area where you finally made a change? Did you ever smoke cigarettes? Did you finally stop one day, even though you tried many other times? What finally got you to stop? leverage. Somewhere you linked up in your head that failing to change equals massive, immediate, unbearable pain or a level of pain you weren't willing to settle for anymore. And or, man, by changing now, I'm going to get massive, amazing, extraordinary levels of pleasure. We all function this way. So leverage is power. But what's leverage is different for different people. See, some people leverage is, if you don't stop doing this, you're off this team. Right? But people who don't want to lose being on the team, they don't want to be part of that group. So they, man, they hate it, but they make the change. Other people, if you threaten them like that, to them, to comply with you is to give up their identity. They value having their own choices more than you telling them, and they'll leave the team. You get the metaphor? How do you know what leverage is going to work? How do you know it's going to push somebody over the edge? You try different things. You know what the outcome is, and you try something. If it doesn't work, you change your approach. That's what I do. And you'll see many examples of this in our Inner Strength films, if you have an interest, and you'll also see them at the end of this program on our DVD. But what I will tell you is, if you know which of the six human needs a person values most, what are their top two, which I call their driving force, then you know where the most leverage is. Someone who values significance, if they can associate that if I continue this, I'm going to lose significance, I'm going to look like I'm less than, they'll change in a heartbeat. If they value love, and they think if I don't change now, if they get in their body, failing to change now is going to cost me love, they'll change in a heartbeat. If they value certainty, and you feel like they're going to lose control, lose certainty if they don't make this change, they'll change in a heartbeat. So if you want a shortcut to finding the best leverage, look for what need structure they value most and relate the leverage to that. Here, I'll give you a dramatic example. I had another seminar one time, and I found out again there was a gentleman in the seminar, different situation. His name is Jim. In fact, we made a movie of this, a film of this. So if you're a therapist, you can actually get credits for watching it and following through and learning the distinctions on it. But Jim was this sweet, sweet man. He stood up, and he was emotionally broke. And what I mean by that is, I mean, the guy was on his last leg. He came to the seminar kind of as his last approach, seeing if there's anything he could do to make his life work. And he was suicidal. I'm using a suicide example again because they're the most dramatic, as you might guess. So if you can do this with somebody suicidal, you can obviously do it with somebody who's frustrated or overwhelmed or feeling depressed. So my point is, with Jim, you know, I found out where he was. I started talking to him from the front of the room. And here was Jim's model of the world. Jim's entire life was about contribution. He wanted to be significant enough in his life that he would be loved. And the way to do that was significantly succeed in business, be a really successful businessman, make a lot of money, but don't just make it for yourself. Donate that money and make a difference for other people so they'll love you. So be significant, contribute, so you'll get love. Kind of follow the need structure? So what's the problem with that? Well, nothing. Jim was a very driven man, very smart man. So in a 12-year period of time, he built up a $24 million a year business. Pretty darn good from scratch. Did it with a couple of small partners. And Jim, though, along the way, his greatest pride was not only was the successful Orange County businessman, but that he took a significant amount of his profits and he donated to people that were in a handicapped situation. So here's this beautiful man, a giver, somebody who's trying to contribute. He's just a little love bug, just wanted love. So P.S., what happens? Well, in the late 90s, when the Internet 1.0 was going strong and the stock market was going crazy, Jim took some of the money he made and he started to invest. And he was getting extraordinary returns, sometimes as much as 10 or 20 or 30% in a month. He was doing leveraged types of investments, a lot of options, and just making a fortune on the side, not out of his business, just from his investments. And so his sister-in-law pulled him aside and said, look, you got to take our money and invest it for us. And Jim said, well, look, I'm not a professional investor. He said, you know, I'm doing well right now, but, you know, I wouldn't want to invest your money. What if I lost the money? She said, you're not losing money. You're making a fortune. We could never make this kind of money. He said, well, you know, I have, you know, a stockbroker. I could turn you over to him. They said, no, you are making the decisions. Please do this for us. So framed as a gift, as a contribution, this appealed to Jim. So he said, okay, he got to be the hero. So he took all of this money and he invested it and they succeeded. So then they wanted to give him more until he pretty much had given Jim their entire nest egg. Jim, of course, put it right beside his own investments. He didn't do anything differently. He didn't touch that money for himself. And then one day, all hell broke loose. And what happened? Well, when Jim told me the story, he looked like a crushed soul. I mean, he's bawling uncontrollably, crying. What occurred? Well, Jim said, you know, I was gone busy on my business for 3 or 4 days. And he said, I told my stockbroker that we needed to start taking some off the table and being a bit more conservative. And he said, but he felt really confident, so he put me in 7 positions. And he said they were all option positions. Now, if you're not familiar with options, you know, if you buy stock and the company goes to zero, you lose all your money. But if you buy options and the stock goes down, you don't just lose your money, you end up owing money. And in one day, he wiped out everything Jim had accumulated in his lifetime, all of his investments, all of his cash, and worst of all of the money that he'd been investing that came from his sister-in-law. Now, you can only imagine Jim's fear and anxiety and frustration and insanity that he was feeling inside. And so, long story shortened, it got to the point where Jim lost everything. He lost his business. He lost his home. He went through a divorce. I mean, it was the worst experience he could ever dream of his life. Completely broken. He had no way to contribute economically anymore to the Handicapped Association. And so when I met Jim, he had finally figured out a plan. He hadn't told anybody, but it got uncovered. What was his plan? Oh, different than Bob's. He wasn't going to kill his kids or anything of that nature. He was going to kill himself. Why? Not only because he felt broken, but because it felt like he couldn't solve this. Remember, when your life conditions don't equal your blueprint, and you feel like you have no control to make it better, when you feel helpless, people suffer. And his suffering got so bad that he decided the way to make an ultimate contribution would be to sacrifice his life. As I dug in with him on this, and you can watch this on film as it unfolds live if you ever want to see this, interestingly enough, his belief system was, I have an insurance policy. So while I'll be dead, my sister-in-law will finally have her life savings back, everyone else will be taken care of, and instead of being a failure in life, my life will have served. Well, as I brought back to Jim and began to refocus him, I said, Jim, can you imagine what this would do to your sister-in-law for her to feel that you took your own life, that you somehow thought that money was more important to her than you? And he said, look, I know I'm important to her. He said, but frankly, at this stage, the money's even more important. And you could see in his face all the pain of what people had said to him and how they felt like he had failed them and how they blamed him. And so almost nothing I could do, even though I understood his world, I hadn't found a way to leverage him. I thought, you know, caring for his family, the hurt that his mother would feel to know that he died and killed himself, the hurt that he would do to other people, none of that was enough because his pain in the moment of feeling like he'd not contributed and he'd hurt everybody was much worse than maybe they'll feel bad when I die in his mind. I wasn't able to find leverage until one point in time where I had to make change a must for him, where he couldn't use this plan. I looked at him and I said, well, frankly, Jim, if you're going to be so selfish that all you're going to focus is on how to meet your needs so you can feel significant by dying and not caring about what it does to your mother or anybody else, and you're going to rationalize escaping your pain by killing yourself, I said, you know what? I don't know what happens on the other side to anybody, and I don't know what you believe. Whatever you believe, who knows what happens to someone who takes their own life. But I said, I know one thing. I said, if you do it, no money's going to be paid. And he looked at me in shock and said, what do you mean? I have a life insurance policy. I said, I know. But I said, every life insurance policy has a clause. In that clause, if you take your life deliberately, there is no payout. And I said, you're on videotape right now. This entire session is being filmed. And I said, if you go take your life, I'm going to send the videotape to the insurance company and no one's going to get a dime. And the look on his face, I mean, he was ready to explode. He said, well, you, I don't give you the right to do that. I said, well, I don't really think you have any authority over me, do you? And there was this moment, this intense moment where the leverage was there and I deployed it and he had no choice. We just wiped it out. If he goes and takes his life, he doesn't accomplish any of his needs. His life is not significant. No one's taken care of. It's over, baby. You're going to have to sit here and face the music and find a better alternative. So sometimes leverage is physical. Sometimes leverage is, you know, people will do things for others they care about that they'll never do for themselves. You know, everyone has different leverage. That's why understanding their world is so important. I remember I worked one time with a woman who was in such bad shape. She had these physical intestinal problems. She was stressed all the time. She was in a marriage where she was so unhappy. And I got her to see where the problems were and the changes she had to make and her beliefs and her blueprint. But she kept saying to me, I can't do it. I can't do it. So I kept looking for leverage. And I knew that this woman was, you know, totally committed to health. She was a raw fooder, but she was ill all the time because you can eat perfectly. And if you sit around being stressed all the time, you know, nothing digests right. Nothing assimilates. You're not healthy. And I knew the love of her life was her daughter. She didn't have love with her husband, but boy, she loved her daughter. So I went to her and I said, look, I said, if you continue down this line, how old do you think a person who thinks this way, who acts this way, who believes the things you believe, how long do you think they'll live to be? And she told me an age. I don't remember the age, but it was about 4 or 5 years older than she was right then. And I thought, now she's going to change. She's associated with the fact that if I don't change, I'm going to die. She goes, I still can't change. I said, okay, I got to pull out the big leverage. I have a belief system that says, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to help someone break their pattern, help them change. I'll look for it because my view is if, you know, you really love somebody and you care for them and you find out that they're in a burning building, would you just say, gosh, I hope they get out? I mean, if you care about them, you'd find a way to burst up there and wake them up, assuming they're asleep in the building. And what if you go to the door and the building's burning and you bang on the door and they're one of those kind of people that sleeps real heavy? Would you go, well, gosh, you know, I gave it my best shot. I mean, I banged on the door and then leave? Of course not. You know, what would you do if you really love that person and they're in a burning building and they're asleep in that room? You kick the door down. You do whatever it takes. You get help. What if you knock the door down and now you're going to help this person and they're one of those kind of people that doesn't wake up real well? You know, my little sister was like that. You woke her up in the morning, it was a dangerous sport. You know, I mean, you might get punched, hit. I mean, it was not a good thing. So what if you try to wake them up and a person tries to hurt you? You go, fine, I tried to help them. They're smacking me, fine. They're just going to burn. You know, of course not. If you love them, you knock them on the head if you have to. Knock them out, put them on your back, and drag them out of the building, because sooner or later, what's going to happen? One day, they're going to wake up and go, thank you. They're going to get out of the building and say, oh my God, you saved my life. Well, I'm willing to do anything. So I know sometimes the only reason people haven't changed is you haven't found strong enough leverage. If you've been trying to get yourself to do something, yeah, you want to change for one reason, but hey, it meets some of your other needs. Leverage is the key. You need more leverage. You need to change a muscle. I thought, okay, I got to bring out the big guns. So I said to her, I said, Lisa was her name. I said, Lisa, I said, if you continue this way, then you believe you'll die in a few years. She goes, I know, I know. I didn't tell her she'd die. She said it. I'd never say to someone, you're going to die if you keep this up. I don't think anybody has the right to do that. Nobody knows. But she said it. So if she said it, it's true to her. So I said, well, okay. And you can't change, huh? She goes, I can't change. It's just the way it is. I said, well, then when you die and your daughter is carrying your body, she's one of the pallbearers, will she hate you knowing you could have changed and didn't, or will she just forget you? Ooh, I thought, oh man, I hate doing this, but got to do whatever it takes, right? You got to step in. And there's this long pause, and she started to cry, and I thought, okay, now she'll do whatever it takes to change. Because once it's a must, we find the way. So I thought, at this point, man, I got Lisa. She's crying. She's going to change. We got the leverage here. But guess what? She goes, I know, but I still can't change. I can't do it. I can't. She's crying. And I had this moment in my head, I'll never forget. I thought, oh my God, I mean, this woman's never going to change. And I have this simple belief that if you're going to be an effective leader, an effective therapist, an effective friend or parent, you can't ever buy into the fact that you can't help this person. If you entertain that thought, you're not going to reach them. You're not going to help them. So I said, that's bull. There's always a way. That's my belief. There's always a way to reach somebody. There's leverage in everybody. You just got to find what it is. So I took a breath in for a moment. I thought, my God, there's got to be a way. And then I got it. This woman's a raw fooder. There's nothing she's more militant about is her food and her diet. So I said, I just wonder, do you think her new mom will be a meat eater? I swear to you, it was like this woman was put a rocket in her butt. I mean, her face explodes. She goes, what? How dare it? And I mean, now she's ready to change. She's willing to let herself die. She's willing to let her kid carry the coffin. But she ain't willing to have her kid have a mother that's a meat eater. I draw the line at that. Everybody's got leverage somewhere. All you got to do is find it. But you won't find that leverage unless you do step one really well. You understand and appreciate the world. See, if I didn't know she was a raw fooder, and I better know how militant she was on that, I never would have come up with that idea. The craziest things can change someone. Sometimes leverage is physical. Years ago, there used to be an organization that used to do the Stop Smoking Clinic. It was called the Schick Center. And I don't know if you remember them or not, if you're old enough to remember that. And they used to have this session where they proved, they gave you a guarantee you'd stop smoking. You know how they did it? They put these electrodes on your face and they would shock you every time you reached for a cigarette. Well, you get enough physical leverage like that, you can change just about anybody. But the problem is these people stopped smoking and started eating or started doing something else because they hadn't found a way to meet the need. The cigarettes made them feel comfortable. They're certain. Gave them variety. Gave them connection. They needed a better way to do it. That's the value of six human needs. Okay, so step one, what is it? You got it. Understand and appreciate their world. Create a base of relationship. Make sure they know you're not analyzing their, you're there to help. Two, get leverage. Find that tipping point. Find what it is that's going to make change, not something they're talking about, they want to do, they should do, that's going to make it a must for them. And what'll make that happen? If they link up. Failing to change now means immediate, massive, unbearable pain in their world. And changing now could mean amazing, extraordinary, immediate pleasure. And the reason I say immediate is if it's going to be pleasure 10 years from now or pain 10 years from now, well, you know, who knows what the future will have. You got to make it immediate. That's what I did. I took the future for Lisa and brought it forward. The same thing with Jim. I took the future and I took away his ability to make it happen. I leveraged him.
This session continues on the next CD.